Hi there, my name is Jerem Bogwa, and I'm the host of Crime and Consequences Kenya, a true crime podcast where we tell the life stories of our victims, who they were, what happened to them, and why they still matter. Our pledge today are Nicholas Warunge, Lawrence's father, Anne Wanjiku, Lawrence's mother, Maxwell Njenga, Lawrence's cousin, Christian Njenga, Lawrence's brother, James Kinyanjui Womba, the family's farmhand, Rebecca Nduta, the family's house help, Lawrence Warunge, the accused murderer, and Sarah Muthoni, who was Lawrence's girlfriend at the time of this crime, and his accomplice turned state witness. Just an FYI to my listeners, I am trying to record this episode with my dog in the room and she demands a lot of my attention. So every now and then you may hear her in the background. I've tried to give her a lot of toys to keep her distracted because otherwise she's just going to be sulky. And let's just hope that she does not interrupt me for the 20 minutes or so that I need to do this episode. So in an interview, David Kamau Warunge, who is Lawrence's uncle and Nicholas's brother, said that Nicholas was the last born son in a family of 17 children. The father had three wives, and despite there being multiple wives in the household, he describes their upbringing as very, very united. He said there were little fights between the households, but nothing major to ever cause any family rifts. The extended family, like many families in Kenya, would meet up every year for family get-togethers up until COVID, which is when they had to stop because of the government mandate and the need to, you know, be 6 feet apart so that you're not spreading the virus between each other. But he says that when they would have these get-togethers, that they would have more than 200 family members at a time. So it was a very, very big family. David describes his brother Nicholas as a good man. He says that when Nicholas finished high school, he did what he was expected to do. He went ahead and got a job, he got married, and he would always come to the get-togethers with his family, so his wife Anne and their children. David remembers his brother Nicholas as a happy person. He also describes Anne as a good person who did a good job raising her children because she was their primary caregiver. So David would go off to work and Anne would remain home with the children. David in this interview said that he does not remember a time where Anne went to him and said that her children were having any behavioral issues. So her children were well behaved and generally from the outside, they looked like a happy, healthy family. Nicholas, at the time where Anne was the primary caregiver, he had found an opportunity in the United States and so he would travel for work. The first time that he ever left the country, he was gone for about 5 or 6 years at a time. So he went for 5 or 6 years straight. And then when he came back after the 5 or 6 years, he would go to the US and then come back as work demanded. Lawrence Warunge had been in boarding school from class 8. So from a very, very young age, he was taken to boarding school. And he would only come home for the holidays and then go back to school. When Lawrence was 21 years old, COVID-19 hit the country and he stayed home with his family. So I'm guessing this was not a dynamic that he was very used to because again, if you're in class 8, you're about 12 or 13 years old and you do class 8 in high school, you go through the 4 years in high school again, which is I'm assuming he went to a boarding school and then probably you go to university far away from home. So for a lot of people, COVID-19 is the first time where you spent a lot of time with your family. Now, during this time, during this COVID-19, David describes Lawrence as reserved and he really did not go out much except either to go to town or to go to the shops. Other than that, he kept to himself and there really wasn't much to tell about his behavior during this time, according to David. So this is a direct quote from David. He says, "We're the family of Warunge, but every one of us raises their children differently. But if there's a problem, you call your brothers to help you solve problems. We never had anything from the family." Now, it's Tuesday night, January 5th, 2021. Just to remind you a bit of where Kenya was at the time, Health CS Mutahi Kagwe had just announced that day 219 people had just been diagnosed with COVID-19, bringing the total number of cases to 97,127. at around David P at around 9 p.m. according to David, he says that he receives a call from one of his brothers, and his brother was like, do not go outside, we think they're thieves and somebody is dead. So after this, David's son and the, because remember, David comes from a very, very huge family, there are 17 siblings. So some of his sons and his brother's sons, they call the local chief, because the person who was dead was a local Buddha Buddha guy. So they call the local chief, and then the local chief comes with the police, and together they go to the crime scene where the body had been found, and that is where they discover that it was the Buddha Buddha guy. So this Buddha Buddha guy had been killed very, very close to the Nicholas Warunge's compound. So when they're there, they're like, well, we might as well check on our brother. So they go to his gate and they call out, Nicholas, 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 like, good job, come out here, somebody's been found dead near your compound, but they don't get any answer. So according to David, he says that because his outside lights were on, Nicholas, they all assumed that the family was sleeping, and so they were like, we're just not going to bother them, we'll just tell them what happened tomorrow. So they left. So the family members, the police and the chief, they all left. They left the compound of Nicholas Warunge. Now that same night, still Tuesday night, January 5, 2021, Lawrence Warunge is at home with his father Nicholas, his mother Anne, his younger brother Christian, his cousin, and their farmhand and their house help. He's 22 at this time, and he's a second year IT student at Mount Kenya University. According to police reports and the court documents that I read, it's unclear when Lawrence killed everybody. But according to the research that I did, the first person that I think died was the family's farmhand, James Kinyanjui Wambao. Kinyanjui is said to have been killed first before the rest of the family. He was 35 years old, and he was attacked outside in the servant's quarter with a blunt object, so he hit him with something in the head before being stabbed to death. So after Kinyanjui dies, the next person that Lawrence attacked was his father, Nicholas Warunge, who was also outside the house. Lawrence came at his father with a knife, and when he got to his dad, he just started stabbing his father. So he's stabbing him and he's stabbing him. And I can just imagine the shock of the dad, because first of all, like, why is my child trying to kill me? You know, and again, I'm being stabbed, you know. So he starts stabbing his father, and his father is, you know, in the confusion of it all, he attempts to make a run for his life and go outside and try to call for help. So Nicholas runs away, and then Lawrence follows him. According to the reports that I read, they said that he hunted him down and he continued to stab him to death at a nearby plantation. Inside the house was his mother and everybody else. So when Lawrence kills his dad, he goes inside the house where he finds his mother, and he just starts stabbing her as well. He stabbed his mother over and over in the chest and in the face. She had defensive wound on her arms, which suggested that she attempted to fight Lawrence, but unfortunately she was not able to fight him, and so she is also killed. The next person that Lawrence goes to is his younger brother, Christian Warunge, who was in his bedroom when Lawrence also attacked him and started stabbing him. Christian died in the corridor of their home, I'm assuming also trying to run away from Lawrence. Lawrence then goes and finds his cousin, Maxwell Njenga, who is also inside the room with Christian, and he also stabs him to death. Finally, he goes into the house help's room. Her name was Rebecca Nduta, and Rebecca was sleeping at the time, and he just started to stab her, and he stabbed her to death as well. Now let's talk about the plan. Lawrence says that his first plan with his family was to use carbon monoxide to kill everybody. And according to the Mayo Clinic, when too much carbon monoxide is in the air, the body replaces the oxygen in the red blood cells with carbon monoxide, and this leads to serious tissue damage or death. And carbon monoxide is referred to as a silent killer because it has no odor, it has no taste, and it has no color. So you can't smell it. You're just inhaling it and dying slowly without even knowing. Lawrence says that he tried to use carbon monoxide on his family 3 times, but it did not work. So at this time, Lawrence is dating somebody called Sarah Muthoni, who was his accomplice turned state's witness. And he was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask my girlfriend to help me kill my family. So he goes to Sarah. He's like, yo, Sarah, I have this plan. You know, it's a bit crazy, but just keep an open mind. So he's like, you know, the way my parents, they don't even want me to be with you. And me, I just want to kill everybody in my family. And then Sarah's like, what, you want to kill everybody in your family? He's like, yeah, if I kill everybody in my family, we're going to live peacefully together. Nobody's ever going to bother us. Nobody's going to tell us what to do. And your life and my life are going to be much, much better together. So he promises Sarah that they're going to live very peacefully together if all of his family is dead. And because they would be dead, he would do everything in his power to make her life better for doing such a big thing for him. So Sarah is like, you know what, babe, I love you. I'd do anything for you and I want us to be happy together or whatever. And so she goes, she buys the knife. So she goes and buys a 9-inch knife with a metallic handle in Ica. And then she takes it to Lawrence. So this time, they're reportedly living in a rental house in a place called Jukaze in Maimahio. It's more than an hour from where Lawrence and his family lives because they live in Kiambu County. So Lawrence is like, yeah, no, I have this, you know, I've tried using carbon monoxide. They're not dying. No, I have this knife, you know, like, thank you so much, babe. This is going to make everything better. I promise. So Lawrence is like, okay, no, I have the knife. I need an alibi, you know, just in case they come, they start asking me questions like what has happened. I need an alibi. I need to make sure that I'm not suspected in any of this. So to establish his alibi for that night, he, again, for some reason, he attempts to get his girlfriend drunk and high so she can pass out. And when I read this, I was asking myself, if he had already told the girlfriend that I'm going to go kill my, like, go buy me this knife and then I'm going to go kill my whole family with it, I don't understand why, again, he was trying to get her high and drunk so that she can pass out and then he can sneak out of the house, go to Kiambu, kill his family, and then come back. Like, I really didn't understand his thinking or his reasoning with his attempts at getting an alibi. So Sarah had never done drugs before. And so when Lawrence is like, yeah, just smoke this joint and, you know, take a little sippy sip with this, she's like, no, thank you. I'm not doing that, you know? And so he's like, damn, I don't have an alibi. But Lawrence is like, you know what? I'm determined. The fourth time, four times is the lucky, this is my lucky number. I'm determined to do what I need to do. So after the girlfriend refuses to take the drugs and drink so that she can pass out and he can be like, yeah, I was with her taking care of my girlfriend the whole night. He's like, I'm still going to go. I'm still going to go home and I'm still going to do what I need to do. So he leaves Modoni that night. He goes an hour all the way to Kiambu County. He kills his family. He goes back to Modoni. And then the two are said to have immediately moved out from their house and relocated to a hideout in Luakabete. Luakabete is now about an hour and a half away from where they were staying. And again, when I was reading this and doing my research, I was like, I don't understand the thinking of these people. Because A, Sarah Muthoni, you've already been told that he's going to kill his family. You're the one who's gone out and bought the knife that will kill the family. Then he's like, okay, I told her my whole plan, but you know what? I'm going to try and take advantage of her so that she can't see that I wasn't here with her. Maybe that's what he was thinking. He was like, if she's passed out, there's no way she can say that, Ati, I left. And so if they come to me, I can be like, no, I was here with her because she was drinking and I was like, I had to take care of her. But then again, after he goes and kills his whole family, you still follow this man and the two of you go to hide somewhere in Luakabete. It's just, it did not make any sense to me. The whole thing did not make any sense to me. He has gone and he has killed his family, right? In January 2021, he kills 5 members of his family, including the farmhand and the house help in the family. So the next day when, of course, the bodies are found the next day, police are called to the scene. So at first, police are thinking that, you know what, because they had said there was a robbery going on yesterday, maybe this is that robbery and it just went very, very wrong. But then they were like, why would these thieves just like, because the stabbing was so, there was so much stabbing. They're like, this looks a bit personal. You know, this doesn't look like organized crime where they're just trying to kill you as fast as they can and take away as many things as they can. This is just somebody who is like stabbing you and stabbing you and stabbing you. You know, it looks personal. And then the second thing that when they were doing their investigations, they realized that Lawrence was giving them inconsistent statements. Because at first, remember, Lawrence was not a suspect in this case. They were just like, oh my God, this poor boy, his whole family has been killed, you know, and now what's he going to do? And so they're just trying to talk to him. So initially he tells the police that, no, me, I was not here. I was not here during the killing. But the way he was behaving, according to detectives and court documents, was very suspicious. You know, he claimed that he didn't know too much about the murders, but then he was saying, I wasn't here, I was here. You know, his answers were not consistent. And I really, 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 really wish that Kenyan police would start releasing the statements that these people make. I don't know if there's a law against that or whatever, but I really wish we could see them when they're interviewing these people, so that people like me who have a crime podcast can have a bit more content when you're telling these stories. And then that thing that led to Lawrence's arrest was surveillance footage and witness testimonies. So the family apparently had CCTV, which again, I'm like, Lawrence, did you not know that your own house had CCTV before you go killing everybody? So he says that he wasn't there. But the CCTV footage of his family shows him leaving and returning to the house on the day of the murders. And this was when the police were like, huh, but you told us you're not here, but according to this footage, like, you left and then you came back, but you told us you're not here. And then you're also behaving very weirdly, very suspiciously. You're not giving us, you know, your answers keep on changing. Your answers are not consistent. The fourth thing that led to Lawrence's arrest was physical evidence. Investigators found that Lawrence's phone records and movements on the day of the killing pointed to his involvement. So police these days can track your smartphones. So he said that he's not there, but your phone and this CCTV footage and your behavior, just everything about you is off. Everything about you is off. But they say that his phone records and movements on the day of the killings pointed to his involvement. Furthermore, a bloody machete, a bloody panga, was discovered near his home. And I guess when they took fingerprints and everything, this directly linked him to the crime scene. And then after all this, the thing that now solidified his arrest was his confession. So after prolonged questioning and just the evidence, you know, the evidence just kept on piling against Lawrence, he eventually confessed to the crime. In his statement, which again I wish we could have access to, he revealed that he had planned the murders of his family for several days. And when they asked him, why would you do this to your family? He said that he had been motivated by anger towards his family, particularly his parents, due to long-standing issues. And so when I was reading this, I was thinking, if you're away from your family for a very, very long time, especially at that age of 18, 21, where you've just started to discover your independence, I can see how COVID-19 and being in our African households and a lock and key with our parents 24/7 would have, you know, a lot of people would have been frustrated in that situation. But does that justify killing your father, your mother, your younger brother, your cousin, the house help, the farmhand? I just, for me, wasn't justification enough. You know, that I was angry at my parents who just decided to kill everybody. It's not justification enough. So the combination of physical evidence, his contradictory statements, and then eventually his confession is what led Lawrence to be arrested, and he was formally charged with the mass murder of everybody that he killed. Oh, my dog fell asleep. She's so cute. Now, let's talk about Lawrence's behavior, his behavioral analysis. Before the murder, according to my research, this is what I found out. One, there was some isolation and mental distress. Lawrence was described as a loner who distanced himself from his friends and his family. There are reports that suggest he had some grievances against his parents, and he felt that his parents were very, very controlling. You know, they're trying to control my life. They're trying to control me and I don't like it. And that he had also said that he doesn't feel like his parents support him. He had also been struggling with a lot of academic pressure, and he had their reports again. I can't confirm this for sure, but there are reports that he had dropped out of school for some time. Number two, Lawrence is said to have had an obsession with violent and dark content. He was reportedly fascinated with violent crime shows and murder documentaries. And when I read this, I was like, listen, me personally, I like my true crime. I like true crime content. But for me, the way I consume true crime content, it's from a point of, I don't want to say fascination, because it's not fascination. It's just curiosity of human nature. Because I'm like, taking somebody's life and then the steps that people do to try and cover up, to try and hide what they've done, it's so twisted. And the human brain is just, the things that it can conjure up to try and hide the things that somebody has done, it's just, there is some level of fascination, but with the psychology of it, not with the crimes that they commit. For me, it's just with the psychology behind the crimes. That is what's fascinating to me. Another thing, because this case really got a lot of media attention, another reason why people are very fascinated with this case is because Lawrence said that he got the idea to kill his family from watching Killing Eve, which is a British TV series, and he researched how to execute murders without leaving evidence, but he left a ton of evidence behind. So I guess he didn't do a very, very good job in his research. He also allegedly studied how criminals operated and even bought a weapon similar to those he had seen in, you know, the violent and crime documentaries that he was watching. But if you look at the way that he committed this crime, it was very sloppy. And I mean, I'm not saying that I would have done a better job, but come on, if you did your research, like, then you would know things like, don't go with your phone, make sure that the CCTV doesn't find you, don't make it too obvious that this is a crime of passion, and don't leave any of your DNA behind. I mean, especially, it would have been easy with the DNA because this was his family home, you know, of course his DNA is everywhere, but on the murder weapon, come on, like, you know. And then there was also the strategic planning of this, and I say strategic planning being very generous, but Lawrence is said to have taken his time to plan the murders, and also for some reason he chose a time when his two sisters were not in the house, because he had two other sisters. So he chose a time when his two sisters were not in the time to, were not at home to commit this crime. And also we know that this was premeditated, because he bought the, it's not like it was a spur of the moment thing. He was at home and his dad said something and he just snapped, went to the kitchen and started stabbing everybody. He had thought this through, right? He told his girlfriend about it. For whatever reason, his girlfriend was like, I'm gonna support you, babe. I'm gonna go buy you the knife that you're gonna use to murder everybody, and then we're going to live happily ever after. Like, what? And reports suggest that he had also tried to research ways on how he could make the crime look like a robbery. So I'm guessing if he had done his research, because we also were not told, the research that I did, you couldn't find a lot of information on how the crime scene looked like, if the house was in any type of disarray, you know, because if he's trying to make it look like a robbery, you would assume that he had, you know, maybe taken some things out of the house. The house was you know, there were people ransacking and just trying to find whatever it is that was valuable. But then again, I can't say definitively that he did that, because there weren't too many details into how the crime scene looked when the police got there. Now, something very interesting happened after Lawrence killed everybody in the house. Lawrence is said to have sat down after he had killed Rebecca, who was the last person to die. He sat down. He went to the kitchen where his mom was cooking some food for the family. He served himself some food. He went to the TV room. He sat down, he turned on the TV, and he started watching his shows. And he was like, yeah, this is normal. I'm going to sit here and eat the food of my dead mother that I just killed, and watch the TV that my dead father, who I also just killed, bought, probably. And yeah, this is a normal Tuesday night for me, you know. Number two, after he killed everybody, he took the weapons, the knife that he was using, and the bloody clothes. And he went, the research says that he went at a distant location. But then again, if the police found it that quickly, clearly you didn't go far enough. So he goes ukoinje kidogo kidogo and he disposes of them. This also indicated that this was a very premeditated murder, not a spur of the moment thing. And even when they were questioning him, despite him not being able to give consistent answers, he was very calm. You know, he was just like, yeah, they died. So, yeah. When he was arrested, he confessed to the murders. The investigators said that he did not show any sort of emotion. There was no remorse. There was no guilt. Yeah, it was just very matter of the fact for him. Yeah, I had been thinking about killing them. I saw Killing Eve. Gave me an idea of how we'd call them. I went, I did the research. I came home. I killed them, I sat, I ate, and then you guys came and arrested me. Yeah. I also read somewhere that his confession detailed how he meticulously carried out the killings without any hesitation, without any sort of hesitation. So following his arrest, Lawrence was subjected to psychiatric evaluation just to see if he was even mentally fit, because maybe he had a mental break. Maybe the pressure that allegedly his parents were putting on him and him feeling not supported and him feeling controlled, maybe his brain was just like, I can't take it anymore. And he had a mental break and this is why he did what he did. But when him and his girlfriend, remember his girlfriend was also arrested as an accomplice, when they were arrested and they were taken to do a psych eval, they were found both to be mentally fit. So he actually did this in his quote-unquote right brain. So initial findings, when they were doing the initial evaluations, they were like, you know what, this one is not fit to stand trial. But I also think it's just the shock of how can you do this and just be so calm and speak about it in such a matter of fact where you must not be good in the head. But the more they did assessments, the more they were like, well, you actually are mentally fit. Like there is nothing mentally wrong with you that you could say that, you know, it's because of this and that, you know. And according to the research that I also did on his possible mental health issues, his behavior suggested that he had deep psychological distress. He possibly had a personality disorder, or when he was doing whatever he was doing, he had gotten to a point where he was so depressed that he had completely detached himself from reality. So what he was doing and where he actually was in his brain, there was a break between those two things, you know? Yeah. So Lawrence's case is still about, we're what now, in 2025, been about 4 years since this murders, and he's still not been sentenced. His case is still ongoing. And yeah, his family is still trying to ask for justice. You know, I saw somewhere, let me pull it up. So in April 15th of 2021, Lawrence pleaded not guilty to the 5 counts of murder. And then again, they had him take another fitness to stand trial assessment. And then move forward to January 2024 last year, both Warunge and the Jenga families, because remember he also killed his cousin Maxwell, they petitioned Chief Justice Martha Koome, emphasizing that justice delayed is justice denied. Because how do you have all this evidence and 4 years later, the person that killed his father, his mother, his brother, his cousin, the farmhand, the family's house help. We don't know if he's the one who killed the Buddha Buddha guy outside. I could not find that anywhere. But those 5 murders, he is the one who's suspected to have done them. There's still no sentencing. There's still no conviction. So the family is like, justice delayed is justice denied. The more he's not sentenced and starts facing punishment for what he did, the family is not going to feel like any justice has been served, even if he's behind bars. And yeah, so as of today, June 2025, Lawrence has still not been sentenced. And yeah, no sentencing or conviction has been issued yet. So the case is still ongoing. And that is the story of Lawrence Warunga and his family. So if you've made it this far into the episode, thank you so much for staying with me for this very few minutes. I will see you guys again next Wednesday. We're going to have a brand new episode, a brand new story, a brand new case. And if you've enjoyed this episode, remember you can rate us if you're listening on Spotify, leave a comment, and you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at crimeandconske. Bye.